today, your guest host, Karen Benton, is here. Karen is a mother, nurse practitioner, certified body talk practitioner, Franklin Method instructor, and owner of Limitless Living LLC. Joyful, abundant, and bursting with energy. Here is your guest host, Karen Benton.
Good morning. This is Karen Benton. I'm thrilled to be your host today for Colette's show every third Wednesday of the month, which means today is the third Wednesday of the month. Where is time going? I can't believe September. We're already in the third Wednesday. So my intention is to provide information, experiences, science, and stories that ignite within you new pathways and potential for an even deeper connection to your true nature. I search my knowledge far and wide to the people I've connected to that inspire me, and I bring them on the show to share with you what I feel is impactful information, powerful stories, and infinite potential for your life. So podcasts are available for every show on truthisfunny.com, transformationtalkradio.com. For the ones that I host, they're on karenbenton.com. We invite you to call in live with any questions, shares, insight, whatever you may be curious about, wanting to explore, share in the show with us. 1-800-930-2819. Now, as always, of course, I am very excited with my guest that I have today. We are exploring a topic that is her baby, that is called the art of observation. And part of my path has been to continually upgrade the ability of which we can manifest change without doing much. And I think just the title alone is going to start to break open the container of which where you have held your ideas of what needs to happen in order to enact change. Dr. Tracy Clark, I have taken many of her classes. She is an absolutely phenomenal teacher. Her handle on Facebook and Instagram is Quantum Physician. But not only is she knowledgeable about the science, she's really great at making applicable to everyday life, which, as we will be exploring, this type of science did not happen yesterday or 10 years ago or 20 years ago. It's been around for a long time. So exploring this information with someone who's dedicated their life to making it applicable so that everyone can take a piece of it to upgrade their lives thrills me more than, you know, it's why I'm here, it's what I do. So with no further ado, Tracy, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for taking an hour out of your day to explore with us here.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's such a pleasure to be here, and of course, to explore the concepts that are so close to my heart. Thank you for this opportunity.
So I love to start with, and I love your story too, unique, because I believe your background is a dancer, right? Mm-hmm. And when you were a dancer, could you have foreseen that within however many years time, 10 years, 7 years, 8 years, that you would be hashtag quantum physician?
Not at all. No. Yeah, it's true. I came into this work from a very different path. As you mentioned, I was a professional dancer for 20 years. I lived in the world of competition and performance and coaching and judging. And it was my own health issues, really, that sent me on the journey of looking for other answers and other possibilities. And, you know, being raised in a very Western medicine home, like so many people, I think my understanding of medicine is that if there's something wrong for you or with you, you'd go find a prescription. It was always really an outside job, looking for that external force or external specialist that had the answer to offer a remedy. And I found myself in a situation, as many people do, with an illness that Western medicine didn't have an answer for. And it was that journey of looking for other options, really, opportunities, I'll say, instead of the obstacle of illness that set me on this journey. And somehow I always believed that healing was an inside job. Mm-hmm. And I don't know really what taught me that, but I really believed that wholeheartedly. And on that journey of healing, I was really looking for answers to empower myself in my own healing. And that opened up a whole new world for me. And I think as many people discover in that search for their own healing, they launch into a path of passion towards helping others in that direction. And 10 years of education later, here I am. And boy, it has certainly been a, rewarding journey, not only in my own health, my own life, but really that opportunity to teach worldwide and to see people like yourself, Karen, actually really changing the face of medicine and offering answers for clients who were, like me, really at the end of their rope.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is an interesting thing, right? Sometimes we have to be and get to the end of our rope in order to open up to what's awaiting us, which there's a level of, it shouldn't be that way, right? We shouldn't be depressed. We shouldn't be sad. We shouldn't worry. We shouldn't have fear. And yet, which we're going to get into a little bit later, because I absolutely love your explanation of what emotions offer us. And I think even in my own journey of times where I had seen, you know, psychiatrists, where I was recommended medication, I'm kind of like what you said. I may not have known much, but there was this no, not for me. And that not at all says that is true for everyone, but I knew it for me, which in that time frame was pretty crazy because I didn't know much else, but I just knew I wanted to keep searching and I kept doing that. But reframing this idea that the emotions are something we shouldn't have. And maybe we should go right into that, because I feel like I know our title is Art of Observation, but I'm going to let you guide it, right? Would you like to give an introduction to your passion about the art of observation, or you could use emotions that so many of us see as being a sign that something is wrong as a sort of segue into it. So take it away.
Take it away. Woo. Yeah, I think there's a couple of answers there for you, Karen.
It was like seven questions in one.
I agree with you. I think that the approach to emotion from a Western perspective is one that's really limiting. And when we talk about the concept of observation as being an aspect of healing, what we're really talking about is the ability to observe a different potential. And quantum physics tells us that for any one experience to manifest, there are multiple, in fact, infinite probabilities that exist. And the one that we experience is really where we drop our energy, the one that we observe. And if you think of them as parallel pathways, you know, where our observation goes, energy flows, matter forms, and that's what we manifest. That's what we experience. You know, oftentimes when people are on the journey of self-healing or self-transformation, we come into the concept of control. We talk a lot about the fact that, you know, control is a bit of a misnomer, something that we all search for and yet in essence really don't have. But the thing that we do have control of is really how we respond to life's experiences. And I love the Chinese medicine definition of health. Because in Chinese medicine, we understand that health is the ability of an organism to adapt to challenge. So adaptability is really the key component to health on a physical, mental, emotional, spiritual level.
And I'm going to interrupt you. I want you to say that one more time and slower. It's so powerful.
Yeah, I feel like it should be on a t-shirt.
I might make one.
I think it's so poignant that health is the ability of an organism to adapt to challenge, internal and external. And here we are in a situation of challenge for everybody on this planet at the moment. So, you know, what is a better time than now to really be exploring these concepts of adaptability and what that means in our life? And I think ultimately, from an observation standpoint, adaptability is the ability to observe something differently. So when we can shift our capacity to observe, we shift we open the door to other potentials, other potential experiences. And that exists for every one of us in every moment of every day. But we also know that we're habit-oriented, right? And so as humans, we're so driven by habit that a lot of times our inability to see another potential is literally just the lifetime formation of habits and how that directs our observation. So when we come back to emotion, we could talk about that idea and the concept of observing emotion differently. And I think from a Western perspective, we're often really only familiar with what we'd really refer to as the pathological expression of emotion. So if we look at it from an Eastern perspective, if we look at it from a quantum perspective, the word emotion is literally energy in motion. It's designed to be in motion. And in fact, it's designed to create motion, which is amazing. Right? So what does that mean? Emotion begins energetically. It's an energetic experience that literally creates a neuropeptide, a chemical in the brain, that is designed to cause motion and response in every one of your cells. And because you are a macrocosm of cells, it's designed literally to create motion in you, either away from danger, either towards your path, you know, into an experience of intimacy, or away from one that's not protected or not supportive. It's the ability to solve problems. It's the ability to transition and to let go and to move forward. That's really what emotion is designed to help us to do. But I would say more from a Western perspective of philosophy, we have a tendency to look at, again, the pathological expression. What if emotion doesn't result in motion and gets literally like a chemical stuck in our tissues? Then it creates those uncomfortable expressions of emotion that we're most familiar with. So, you know, we really talk about that concept of emotion. If we shift our observation from something that is discomforting, and we can understand that it has a healthy function, and we can embrace what that is trying to get us to do, then we have a very different relationship to our emotions. You know, ultimately, they're a resource.
We see, I mean, there it is, art of observation. So we are observing our own emotions differently. And if you are listening to this live, or if you're listening to this on the podcast, I highly recommend rewinding. Most of them work. Rewinding, and listen to that several different times, because in my own experience, it goes deeper each time. And I think part of what helps it go deeper is not only the words that a person uses, but the understanding that is existing behind the words, right? So, which again is almost how you are observing yourself. You had to learn to observe emotions differently in your own body, which I would guess was a huge part of your healing journey. Absolutely. So then when you just speak those words, many of us can tap into that potential, that feel, that sense, and feel it. You know, and suddenly, you know, if anybody's listening, you feel your shoulders relax, your body, you know, and what another thing, right? You might yawn, like that's a big one, right? Which is a hilarious no-no in our world. Like you don't look like you're bored, right? And but you know, that can be a sign that you are receiving things more deeply, that you are relaxing. Therefore, your body saying, "Hey, wait a minute, we need to take a deeper breath. Let's bring more nourishment
taking in life through. In Karen
what's that
because we're taking life in with that yawn.
Yeah, and then let go. Like your body naturally does the most intelligent thing, and you can take in this idea of how you observe your emotions. Super, super powerful on a physiological level, right? Is that a leap?
Absolutely. No, not at all, because you know that every single thought you have creates a physiological response, which means that your physiology is really an expression of your mind. So when you can reframe the way you observe something, and even more importantly, I think reframe how you communicate it, either to yourself or to others, we really shift the vibrational frequency of the thought pattern, which then influences the emotional response, that then influences the physiological response, and in fact, our genetic response.
Wow, right? And that whole vibrational frequency, I think we can all tap into that. You know, some people might say, well, what is that? What does that mean? But I think, especially in the English language, right? We have one word for love, where other languages have how many, right? China, you know, they have so many different words because there's so many nuances and subtleties to the expression of love. We're kind of limited to one, although we're all trying to make up different versions of it, which is always what I try to do when people ask me, what do I do? I'm like, yeah.
Well, I have to say, you know, when you talk about emotion, Karen, nobody ever explained to me until I started this journey of healing that healthy anger is simply motivation. It's productivity. It's action. I never ever thought of that as being anger. And that's in fact exactly what anger creates in you. It is that energy to get up and get going and do things and get them done, make decisions, put plans together. Right? I only ever knew anger as being a negative thing, frustration, irritation, agitation, rage. Right? And I think that for me, that was a huge shift of observation in my life, definitely. Yeah. You know, I never thought of worry as being the energy to think. We use it, we're using it right now. any opportunity we have to solve a problem, come up with a solution, put our energy into thinking, that's worry. That's exactly what it does for us in our daily life. But again, a lot of times our association is with the negative aspect of it, anxiety, concern, right, stress, which is really what happens when we don't act upon that initiative or that impetus in our life.
When we may be holding back an expression that we are, part of us maybe really wants to engage in, so we start to worry.
Yeah,
maybe, you know, and the worry is perhaps even a redirection or an impetus to get yourself into action to do what you may be hesitant. You know, I mean, even like I think about doing the work that I do, you know, there were times where I thought I was crazy to leave. You know, I was a nurse practitioner in a surgical trauma ICU. I worked as a, you know, a Columbia Presbyterian. You know, I had something that was generally recognizable, respected, titles that are, you know, and now, you know, it's like, what do you do? Well, you have to come experience it because we don't really have words for it. But the worry was a huge part for me in transitioning into what I was inspired to do.
Because it was different. Fear as well, you know, healthy fear is the ability to say no to something that's no longer supportive of you. And healthy fear is the ability to create a boundary and maintain that boundary. And then that moves us into anger, which is action, right? To make the decision that this isn't supportive for me and I'm not on my life path here. That's the transition of fear into anger and a healthy expression in our life. We don't often call it that, right? We don't observe it in that nature of its natural potential.
Well, let's hit one more, and then we're going to redirect into further into this observation, because I have been very inspired by your explanation of sadness, because Chinese medicine, right, links joy and sadness together as one, which, you know, every logical bone in my body was like, okay, that's not, I couldn't even like fully take it in because I was like, whatever, I don't even get that. And somehow in your class, I received it in a way. So audience, get ready to see how sadness benefits you, what sadness offers you. Go for it.
Well, and what I want to say to that as well, Karen, is that one of the, you know, the discord that you'd feel in that, you know, how can joy and sadness be connected is just simply a limited or what we'd say a wrong meaning attached to that word. And, you know, one of my professors in university, Dr. Amit Goswami, he talks a lot about the fact that so much of our stress, you know, the conflict that we feel in our life is really comes down to a limited or inappropriate meaning assigned to an experience, right? It's context. Mm. So when we come back to this concept of sadness, the context that we tend to hold it in is one in which we feel heartache or sorrow or pining or depression, right? These again are more the pathological expressions of it. The healthy sadness is very interesting. Sadness is actually designed to help you to feel joy from the past. So it is healthy recollection. It is fondness. It is remembrance. It's when we can look back at experience in our life that brought us joy. And when we do that, it actually elicits more joy. It creates more joy in the brain. So healthy sadness is really just the ability to recall joy.
So like nostalgia, yeah? Would that be
nostalgia? Absolutely. Not the type where we're attached to the past, but the time where we go through, we reminisce, we say, oh, do you remember the time that we did this? And brings up that joy experience once again. And therefore the brain is now producing more new chemicals of joy as a relationship to that previous experience. So that's really what healthy sadness is designed to help you to do.
You know, I've searched the research high and low because I remember being told about a study where they looked at an elderly home and they literally piped in music from like the 20s or the 30s and they put on TV, you know, all the same shows that were on in the 20s and the 30s, and they measured the people's general vital signs, blood pressure, heart rate. And I believe they did it over a week period, although I can't find the study. I don't know what it's called. I've looked for it high and low. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I am. They were studying the effects of aging, actually, and environmental, it's an epigenetic study because they were looking at the environmental impact on the genetic expression, specifically in relation to markers of aging. And I think they, I think it was the 1940s, they recreated a whole environment, a room where they
like used, scenario, you know, where they were literally
music
immersed in the clothing, even the staff dressed up in the clothing of that time frame. And I mean, they really went all out and tell us what happened.
You know, literally that the participants, because they had lived through that time, were able to go back to the recall and literally their physiology began to shift. And they saw, instead of aging, they saw vitality returning in many ways. I can't recall the name of the study, but I'm very familiar with it as well. If I can find it, I will.
Let me know. We got to get that up and we'll put it on the podcast link for it because, you know, I mean, what were they doing? They were observing themselves differently, right? Yeah. They just because of the environmental cues that were around, they started to secrete different neurotransmitters, different hormones that affected their physiology. And all that was changed was their environment, which comes right back to what you said before, right? Like the environment, our thoughts, which are course influenced by our environment, right? So many of us are facing a huge array of challenging thoughts based on what the environment is, you know, feeding us the last 3, 4, 5, how many months are we in right now?
Lost track now.
Lifetime, I remember it.
One of the things I think, you know, one of the huge, or maybe I would say most simplistic way that I can talk about my science and my passion of observation is, you know, the difference in the effect of observing an obstacle or observing an opportunity. And I think when we can put it in very simplistic terms that way, we can approach the stressors in our life, whatever they may be, whether they be COVID, which is a big one, right? Whether they be health concerns, whether they be financial or professional or personal concerns. When we look at that, you know, if we look at it from a standpoint of obstacle, the body will go into particular patterns of defense and preparation for battle. When we look at it as an opportunity or a situation of opportunity, the body starts creating those chemicals of thinking. As I mentioned, we go into active problem solving. We start to think outside of the box. We start to look for those other pathways of potential. And I'll never forget one of my clients calling me up one day, wanted to book a session for healing. And she said, "I'm calling because I have another healing opportunity." That's really a symptom, but her language, I thought, was beautiful. She looked at it as, all right, something else has appeared, opportunity for healing. And, you know, to me, that just really puts in such a succinct way what it is that my message really is for most of my clients and my students is, you know, the incredible effect of looking at the opportunity for help or the opportunity for something new or the opportunity for growth and what that has on our body.
Yeah.
You know, they always say that crisis is the mother of all invention, right? So you look at even in this short period of time with COVID, how many new directions businesses have taken. You know, we've really had to step up and figure out different ways to do things. And I think that even if you look at that, this, you know, current situation, we can look at it as an incredible obstacle to our life, or we can look at it as an opportunity to shift the way we do things, experience things differently, reset our priorities, et cetera. And I think that really, this is a macrocosmic example, but that opportunity exists every single day in our life when we approach something that is creates a conflict for us.
Yeah. I feel like there's a, you know, we've been indoctrinated in a way, or should I just speak to myself? So who do I know what we is? But I felt that I was hearing and looking for security, you know, and there is an association between security and something that stays still, you know, yes, which, you know, which inherently our body is, every aspect of it is changing, right? I mean, I think, what is it, every 7 years, we are completely set with new cells. So it inherently is in conflict with the nature of us as a fundamental being that we're in constant change. Yet I had adopted a security framework that often relied upon things staying still or needing to feel that they weren't changing.
And how did that work for you?
What's that?
I said, how did that work for you?
Yeah, not so great. Not so great. You know, I mean, there's times where, you know, I would say to you, I feel like I'm visualizing, like I'm holding on to a tree on the side of a bank. And some days the river is going so fast that the rest of my body is just undulating with it. I'm like, no, I need to stay right here. You know, and the river just keeps flowing. And I think, you know, this idea of conclusions, you know, that this is the way we do it is awesome because it provides security, but the conflict is in embracing that adaptability and that change that is absolutely necessary because that's the fundamental truth of life.
It's so true. I think you've just described disease, actually. You know, we say it in osteopathy, we say a healthy body is a body in motion, that at every cellular level in every moment of every day, you are in motion and designed to be in motion. And it's when motion stops that disease begins. So if we think about, you know, holding on for dear life in one situation, the nature of life, whether it's in your cells, it's in your life or the life of this planet, is one that there's a constant state of transformation. And it's when we resist that we invite disease.
Oh, that's beautiful. So time goes so fast. It is time for us to take a break. When we come back, we're going to go back to, not back, but we're going to dive in a little deeper to this art of observation and the quantum physics principles that you are so wise in to offer that little left brain inquiring mind something to foundationally hold on to that offers us a deeper understanding of why observation alone can catalyze pretty... Oh, let me just go there. Cataclysmic change. Okay. I am here with Tracy Clark. We are on the Truth is Funny radio show, and we will be right back. Thank you.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nooshin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
Do you sometimes feel overwhelmed by your mind? Powerless when it seems to spin in worry circles or bombard you with self-critical thoughts? Do you want to learn how to master your mind and feel more in control of your life? Listen to Dr. Friedman's Empowerment Radio, Shift from Confusion to Clarity, Self-Doubt to Confidence, and from Anxiety to Peace and Balance. Dr. Friedman and his many guest experts share the insights and tools you want to live with greater ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in to Empowerment Radio every first and third Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Feeling like something is missing to achieve your sales goals? Elise Smith is helping ladypreneurs in reaching revenue goals and making the difference they were meant to make by increasing divine guidance in their business. She's created a Facebook group for any woman entrepreneur who believes in a higher power and would like to have support aligning their faith with their business. For more information on joining, search Faithful Ladypreneurs on Facebook or visit divinelydrivenresults.com.
Hi, this is Brittany Miles from Miles to Go, How to Lose to Gain It All. Please join me at the Ultimate Business Summit with 20 top influencers, including me, starting 9/21 through 9/30, absolutely free. Learn how to be a go-giver while you create and grow a wildly successful online business and make a killer living without killing the environment. Reserve today at www.theultimatewomensbusinesssummit.com. See you soon.
Welcome back. And here we are in The Truth is Funny. My guest today is Dr. Tracy Clark, and we are talking about the arc of observation and the infinite potential that lies within just that which we observe and the field of energy that we are participating in when we are observing. Dr. Tracy Clark, would you share with us your contact information should anyone desire to connect with you?
Absolutely. My new website is just about to be launched, so it's not quite up yet, but hopefully in the next couple of weeks it'll be live, and it's going to be quantumphysician.com. On Instagram and on Facebook, you can find me as Quantum Physician, and you can email me at thequantumphysician@gmail.com.
And you are available for sessions. You teach a load of different classes. She is one of the primary body talk instructors, and you can learn the foundational principles of body talk through her with all her amazing knowledge that brings forth her version of it, which is absolutely fabulous. You teach other things, right? Like, I mean, you primarily, yeah, you have a great course for professionals on, you call it Beyond Techniques.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do teach quite a few things. So I'm a senior instructor with the Body Talk system. And that was really the system that launched me into this journey. I discovered that system in 2007, again, partly on my own journey for answers and looking for different perspectives. And I really fell in love with the principles of this system because I would say in the continued studies I've done, this is the only system that really takes quantum principles and applies them directly into healthcare in a way that's accessible, it's teachable, it's repeatable, it's incredible. So I started my journey, and actually that's really where I was introduced to a lot of quantum concepts, because we embrace the concepts of dynamic systems, which we can talk about if you like, or entanglement and observation in that system. And it set me on a journey. Professionally, I began my practice in 2007, but I was so fascinated by the body's ability to heal that I continued my studies. I went back to school, became a manual osteopath. So when time permits, I still teach osteopathic courses as well. And I have a multidisciplinary practice. And I finished osteopathic college, and then, that drive really to learn more about these quantum concepts and how they relate to healing took me into a PhD program in integrative medicine, which is bringing the Western approach and the Eastern approaches together and really adopting a model that addresses and treats the whole person. So instead of just looking at the symptom, it's really more of a healthcare model where we're looking at the influence of our perception, the influence of our belief systems and our thoughts and our emotions and our energy, and, you know, ultimately the physical model that results. So with the university where I graduated, I'm on faculty as a PhD advisor, and I've created courses for them. But my new project, and one that I'm so excited about, really took my dissertation research into a course for professionals, and it's called Beyond Technique. And it looks at professionalism, but more importantly, even the art of practice, and how we encompass these incredible concepts of entanglement between practitioner and client, and the influence of observation, and how we can build a practice that from beginning to end is a placebo in a way that initiates the belief of healing and continues to support that and demonstrate that, and empowering the client in a way that they can observe health in their own life in between sessions. You know, they become their own observer of health. So that's an exciting new project for me. And I've also been launching some courses for people to use in their own life. So how do we take these concepts and apply them in everyday life so we can observe opportunity? And how do we manifest those alternate potentials that I mentioned earlier? And, just teaching people tools that they can apply in everyday life, whether it's for physical health, but even more importantly, mental, emotional, and spiritual health.
Fabulous. I want to ask about placebo, but before I go there, let's dive into the scientific evidence that supports this idea that observation is a tool for healing.
Well, I think if I take it back to a really simple quantum explanation of the observer effect, is that quantum science for the last 200 years has shown us that the act of observing changes that is being observed. That we can't observe something without ultimately changing it or affecting it. And, it was an experiment done in 1801 that really turn science upside down and observed the fact, pun intended, that energy had the capacity to be either a wave or particle form. And but even more importantly, what determined the form that it took was the nature of observation. And that's when we really began to understand that the observer was impacting the outcome. And that really, I think, opened the doors for many quantum principles to emerge in this field of quantum mechanics or quantum physics that we see now. And even more importantly, the field of quantum medicine that's emerging. And so the observer effect told us that when we observe something, we ultimately change it, and we change it by our expectations. Mm. Now, that's huge. Because again, you know, where do our expectations of life come? They come mostly by the time we're 3 years old, we've laid down the framework of how we expect the world to work and how we expect ourselves to exist within it. And, you know, years later, when we have new tools and new ways of understanding context, we're still working with these limited beliefs that we formed at a very young age, and they can impact how we, what we expect of ourselves, what we expect of others, how we expect the life, our life to unfold. And I think most people who have reached adult age and know that our expectations aren't always met. And, you know, if we had one definition for stress, it's an expectation that hasn't been met and an attachment to that expectation.
We joke in my house that I'm the, you know, given my surgical trauma background, I'm like the, I just kind of, anything medical related or illness related, I tend to think, oh, this is not going away anytime soon. And my husband, you know, polar opposite. He's like, that's going to be fine by the end of the week. Like, I remember even at the beginning of COVID, he's like, everything will be back to normal in like a month. And I was like, oh, you're kidding. You know, not saying, but like how our projections and our experiences influence how we look at anything. And so here you are saying that that background belief is influencing how things show up in my life, including the functioning of my body.
What? Yes.
I have that much power over.
Yes. I think what I love about this work so much is that it helps us to understand the amazing superpowers we have at our disposal. We just don't always use them for good. But yeah, I think that so observation and that effect in quantum physics really does tell us that we have a huge impact on our experience of what we are observing, not just because we observe it, but more importantly, how we observe it. And you know, there is so much science out there and in many applications of looking at this principle for over 200 years now. The science that I certainly experienced and was in my dissertation, and my dissertation focus was on the impact of the practitioner observation. You know, how I observe my client and how I communicate with my client, what's the impact of that? And it was an absolutely incredible journey because it highlighted an opportunity for healing prior to any treatment session at all. It highlighted the capacity for relationship and how relationship can impact healing. And I set up an experiment, which I worked with participants without any treatment at all. I was just observing what happens in the first 10 minutes of engagement between a practitioner and a client or a doctor and a patient. And what was fascinating to me was that we saw different elements of engagement and how it impacted the health of the client before any treatment was introduced. In fact, we didn't use any at all. And we just use regular vital sign measurement as we would use in medical practice. I also used a biofeedback scan that was looking at the energetic signatures, the vibrational frequencies of different structures in the body. And what was absolutely amazing was when, as a practitioner, if I used an intake form that was really symptom-based and I discussed the symptoms primarily with the client, they got much worse. Their vital signs really took a remarkable dive, if you will, into a realm of disease. Whereas when the focus of the intake form or the focus of the conversation was on one for goals for health, what their positive outcome would look like, what they hoped to achieve through sessions, what positive health represented for them in their life, we saw their vital signs improve exponentially. And that was without any treatment. However, you could say that that was treatment in itself. Just the nature of observing a potential for healing and discussing it, right, was enough to already start that healing into or initiate that healing process. And it was an incredible thing to see.
So it's even like the practitioner viewing the patient as what's wrong with you versus, you know, which is kind of how I was taught, right? Like, versus what is your potential? Where do we want to go with this?
Absolutely. You know, I think that it's a difference of, okay, this is where we are now, but where do we want to go? What's our goal?
Which we're not ignoring where we are now, right? Like, that's the key piece. We're still, you know, using that as a focus, but you're incorporating these other principles that what you're saying is initiates a healing right there.
Right there.
And again, that's the placebo effect, right? Like, is that it? I mean, we're taught that.
Effect, yes. And I think we should reframe the term placebo effect and call it the belief effect. You know, Dr. Bruce Lipton talks about this at length in his book, The Biology of Belief. And it's one that I recommend to so many of my students because it really does help us to understand the incredible power of our own belief and really what that means in healing. And so if you look at the placebo effect, it's simply the belief effect. And what do we believe? We believe in the potential for healing. And that can come from a practitioner that observes a potential in healing and directs their client's attention there. It could come from, you know, a remedy or a treatment of some sort. If the client truly believes that they have the ability to heal, then any treatment's going to work at that point in time. And ultimately, that's the most important component to success in treatment is the client patient's belief that they can heal. Wow. And you know, so many patients have no idea that they're already in a state of healing. We're always healing. Right? Yeah. Sometimes we come up against some roadblocks and we need some help there. But because the body's in a constant state of healing, we always have that on our side. And I can relate to this
a little bit of like when I worked at Columbia Presbyterian and I had a large number of Holocaust survivors as patients. And I worked primarily with a colon cancer population. And I remember one patient in particular, his name was Werner. I can't remember if that was his last or first name, but I can see his image. So if you can see my eyes, I'm connecting with him. But it didn't matter what was going on. He had a sunny side outlook. He could just receive it. You know, compared to a 20-year-old, a 30-year-old, a 40-year-old, what this man, you know, I could summarize what it was, but I remember being like, wow, I want some of that. Like he just flowed with whatever it was. Nothing upset him. Him and his wife had this beautiful ease relationship. And you would think perhaps his experiences, right? This man lived through the Holocaust. He had a number on his arm that, you know, there was nothing left to sway him, to concern him. He wasn't attached to any particular outcome. I don't even know if I can verbalize it, but to me, that was what I thought of when you said that is, and to me, it was so foreign at that time in my practice to meet someone who just swayed with whatever you told him. It didn't seem to ripple him. It didn't seem to change his demeanor, his vital signs, his outlook, the things he laughed about. Versus you go and I would go to another patient. And of course, and that's not to say they weren't valid in feeling the way they felt, but it was completely different.
Yeah. You know, that's a totally different experience for that patient.
Right. And we
talk about symptoms. You know, you mentioned about not ignoring right, where we are right now. But, you know, even when we reframe our language that the term symptom or disease, again, can have a real negative and fearful connotation. But if I look at that as a practitioner or even in my own life as room for improvement, that's a very different energy because now my focus is entirely on improvement, growth, healing, as opposed to, you know, the obstacle. I've now just created an opportunity with my language.
Like an invitation to change.
Yeah.
This is your body, which is where we go into the body talk. This is your body talking to you. And I love that. And inviting you to transform, inviting you to change, inviting you to learn something new about yourself so that you can step into what may not be your known potential right now. You know, we don't know how great it can get till we start to experience it.
That is so true. That's very true. And I think, you know, when we talk about living from a standpoint of expectation, when we start to shift those old expectations and we start to open our mind to something new, you know, you get into that realm of complete exceeding of expectation. We have something can go so far beyond what we had limited ourselves to expect.
How would you describe your, just given in this context, your first body talk experience, or, you know, even your first sort of, you mentioned that you were having an experience that was not being remedied by the typical Western medicine approach. So, you know, how would you describe your experience the first time you stepped into?
I think the most profound experience for me was energy medicine. It wasn't specifically body talk, but I had been diagnosed with viral meningitis and I was very sick. And as you know, it was viral, so there wasn't much that Western medicine could do at all. I think I've never been so sick in my life, and my doctors were quite concerned about my capacity to survive it. I had a dance student of mine actually who worked in energy medicine, naturopathy, homeopathy, and she was the one really who came to my rescue. And she used so many things that I, you know, couldn't begin to explain how they worked. You know, she put essential oils on my feet, and she did distance sessions. And, you know, keep in mind at this point in time, I'd been raised entirely from a Western perspective, and in the power of the doctor and the power of the pharmaceutical was really my only understanding. And she had all of these tricks up her sleeves. And at this point in time, when I was so desperately ill, I think I was really just open for any support at all. And the fact that she could work with me at a distance and I could feel healing happening was amazing to me. And I couldn't begin to understand it. And it really took me on a bit of a journey of trying to figure that out. How is that possible?
And how would you describe feeling healing happening?
Well, I was in so much pain that I was, you know, just beside myself. I had a fever that had been going on for about 2 weeks. I couldn't find a position of comfort no matter what. And within probably a half an hour to an hour after working with me, all of a sudden I felt calming in my body. I was able to find a comfortable position, was able to actually sleep for a little bit. And then probably within 2 days of her working with me, my fever finally broke. And that was a huge breakthrough, really, when the fever started to shift. So it was something that had been going on, that nothing that my doctor could do really was creating any change. So it was quite obvious to me, mostly, I would say, initially just through that ease and that sense of calm in my own system and the ability to rest and sleep. But that was certainly outside of my comfort zone. It was outside of anything that I had ever even imagined, I would suppose. And it was just serendipity that I happened to have a acquaintance who worked in this field who stepped up when I needed help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think when we look at those situations in our life, we look at the most challenging obstacles, if you will, in your life. Those are the ones that often give us the greatest gifts. And I think if you speak to anyone, you know, and you ask them about difficult situations in their life, a lot of times they'll say, I wouldn't want to do it again, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Because would you have made room for that in your life without being sick, right? Like, would you have gone to see, you know, her for a cold, you know, or for something else that hadn't stopped you in your tracks? Yeah. I mean, you talk about healing potential, infinite potential, looking at any set of symptoms as what they might be offering you. What are you not bringing into life, or what are you ready to bring into life? Like, exactly. You got me changing stuff already.
you're on the right page there, Karen. You know, a lot of times it's our thought process and the words that come out of our mouth, and that opportunity to go, oh, but wait a minute, maybe this is as I said, is what is it gifting me? Is a very different relationship to that particular experience.
So you found in your dissertation study that things like the environment, how you engage with the client, what were some of the other things that influenced?
Well, most importantly, I had every one of the participants fill out an intake form, and I used just a typical medical intake form. And, you know, of course, coming from a medical world, that a lot of times, because Western medicine is diagnostic in nature, we're really measuring symptom patterns so we can attempt to understand or create a diagnosis of what may be happening. So the measurement of symptom is really an important part of the diagnostic process from a Western perspective. So a lot of times the basic medical intake forms tend to be very symptom-based. And, you know, I think one of the things I noticed prior to doing any of this research in my own office is that the intake form that I used should include an area where the clients were asked to circle emotional states that they had experienced within the previous month. And so many of them, after they filled out the intake form, would come in and say, wow, I didn't know what bad shape I was in until I filled this out.
I still remember that moment with my first intake form for my body talk session. I was darn near tears where I circled every single one of them. And I thought, I didn't know I was this bad. But again, I was labeling them as, you know,
and what does that evoke, or what does that create in you, is actually a stress state. It aggravates the symptoms that already exist, because we know that, you know, 90% of dis-ease is simply stress in physical form. Mm. So, before I even did this research, I started thinking, that's not right. My client shouldn't come in feeling worse because of something that I've asked them to do. So as part of my research, I looked at the impact of the intake form, and I looked at the impact of our communication and how I discussed the potential for treatment with the client. And, you know, that was quite remarkable to me, just to see that when we focused on what was wrong as a primary focus, not as okay, this is where we are, this is where there's room for improvement, this is where we're heading, there was an aggravation of those symptoms. And so it was something I think I already had a sense of, just seeing in my own practice. What was amazing to me is the people who got better were the ones who really on their intake focused on their goals for healing and what they wanted to be able to experience in their life, and what type of balance they really wanted to have. And when our communication really focused on that type of thing, it had made a huge difference. There were participants in my study that had hypertension, and when we measured them post interaction, they did show a hypertensive state. And by the end of the 10 minutes, they had come out of hypertension. So, you know, that just really made me stop and think about all of these little pieces of the puzzle that or the rituals, I would say, around healing, whether it's in our own life or it's in a professional practice, that can impact our experience of that illness.
Yeah. Yeah. And sort of the subconscious or the below the awareness influences that are creating the response in the body, right? Like you said, the focus. And what I take away from that also is you're even calling them participants. And it sounds like just by having them participate, by what are their goals, what do they like to do, you know, they participated in the experience, which changed, you know, as opposed to, oh my goodness, fix me. It was like, let's work together. And it's the way I hear it. And you were kind of co-creating an experience that maybe even amplified the healing potential.
Well, I think no matter what practice we're in, if we embrace the idea that the healer in that dynamic is always the patient, right? They're the one doing the healing. No matter what modality I practice as a practitioner, I'm supporting that process. And I think in my communication with my client, I always use the languaging of, all right, let's see what we can do to help your body to heal this, right? So that they understand that's not about me healing them. You know, we're creating an environment for healing. We're highlighting where there's room for improvement and how we can support that. But ultimately, it really does come down to their own healing capacities. And, I serve my client best when I help to empower them to understand those areas in their own life that they can be impacting their health every day in every way. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm wondering. I think we just have a few minutes left, I think, till the end of the show.
Where did that time go?
I thought we were going to take one more break. I got so lost in what you were saying. And I don't mean lost, like involved in it. And I would imagine the audience is going to have, I just had to write to our producer, till the end of show, 1 minute. Oh my goodness. Yes, that's going to be, wow.
Okay. Probably a half an hour left.
Mesmerizing. As I said to you, how quick this can go. This kind of information just absolutely lights me up. So you mentioned, one, we can find you through your website. We can find you through email. We can find you online. There are courses that are available where students can engage with you even if they have no experience whatsoever, right? You can take the Beyond Techniques if you've never
done. Beyond Technique, you need to be a healthcare professional or a student of healthcare. But the five personal workshops are designed for anybody.
Yeah.
And they give the opportunity really to bring these concepts into daily life.
Yeah. And then you also mentioned Bruce Lipton was a book that you, and it, do you have any other hints or suggestions to people that are feeling as lit up and involved as I am to continue to explore and expand how they integrate this type of information in their lives?
Well, I think, you know, some very influential authors for me include obviously Bruce Lipton. As I said, he's a brilliant man in bringing the science of epigenetics into easy and understood and exciting material. So anything that Dr. Bruce Lipton does. Dr. Joe Dispenza has also contributed so many wonderful books and lectures and workshops in terms of really in embracing your own power to change. And I really like the book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. I think that's a great place for people to start when they start to look at other potentials that exist for them. Gosh, the list could go on and on.
And I would just add in there that you can re-listen to this. One of the things as a medical trained practitioner that I didn't always make room for was listening to things over and over and over again. And Tracy can give you so much in one sentence that re-listening to it and letting your body take it in and kind of move up to your consciousness, you'll take something different to highlight each time you listen to her quite powerful words and the wisdom that exists behind those words that is expressed out. So, Tracy, thank you so much for joining us for this hour. I hope we can do this again sometime. Your wealth of knowledge and contribution to the infinite potential of humanity as a whole is very inspiring. I love that you took a new direction after you had, you know, one career. So everyone out there, it is never too late. Whatever your heart and soul is calling for you, utilize these principles and you will be amazed at how you are able to enact the change in your lives.
You've been listening to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan. Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network as she provides energetic shifts and consistent results in every area of life, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. The truth is funny. Visit thetruthisfunny.com for more information. That's thetruthisfunny.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.